I will say that all of these presenters have completed their disclosure statements, and they can tell you that if that's in their slide, but we've definitely assured that. So I'm going to start out by introducing Megan O'Connell. She is a research associate at the Yale Red Center for Food Policy and Obesity. She received her BSW degree from Providence College and her MPH from Curtin University in Perth, Australia. Her current research focuses on the development of food preferences in childhood and how childcare environments can be structured to support healthful eating. Her work investigates ways in which childcare center level, state and federal nutrition policies can impact the diets of young children. So I'll hand it over to her.
Thank you. Good morning. Today I'm going to talk about the impact of proposed federal nutrition policy on the diets of preschoolers, and we'll be looking at the Institute of Medicine's recommended standards as applied to the CACFP meals in two Connecticut child care centers. I have no relationships to disclose, and this study that I'll be talking about was funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. The principal investigator is Catherine Henderson, and I've been the study manager coordinator throughout the 18-month study period, and our research assistants who rounded out the team, Natalia Petruski-Apleva and Danielle Carrera. So first, just briefly, we as researchers care about this age group when we talk about nutrition, because we know that early childhood is the most important time for the establishment of food preferences, and that often preferences and behaviors established in early childhood will last a lifetime. And importantly, the large majority of children between the ages of 3 and 5 are in care or in preschool for at least half time. And so it's a great place to reach young children. Also, for those enrolled for in full day care, up to 8 hours, sometimes up to 10 hours, we know that children have the potential to consume 50 to 60, two-thirds of their daily calories in that setting. And so what those calories look like really makes a difference. So we are interested in centers that participate in the Child and Adult Care Food Program. This is a USDA food program, much like the National School Lunch Program in schools, where centers, child care centers and preschools are reimbursed for serving nutritious meals. To qualify or to be eligible, centers need to have at least 25% of their families enrolled must be low income. And the program benefits over 3 million children every year. And we know that at least in some states, in Connecticut, where this research was done, to be a licensed child care center, if you serve meals, you're supposed to follow the standards of CACFP, regardless of whether or not you're actually enrolled in the program. So these standards have a real potential to influence the diets of millions of children. So any day now, the USDA is expected to release new standards for CACFP meals. We've been expecting them for several months. It's nearly the end of 2013, but we're hoping to see them soon. And these are expected to be largely based on a set of recommendations made by the Institute of Medicine. And so what we thought we would do was to see how, if we were to change the menus in childcare so that they reflect the new standards or the Institute of Medicine standards, what would that do to the diets of the children in care? Will they actually eat the food? And then, based on our findings, do we believe that the USDA should implement the IOM's recommended nutrition standards? And so here is a brief look at what those standards are. The IOM recommends replacing meats that are currently served in CACFP that are high in saturated fat with lean meats or other protein sources, and improving preparation methods. So you see a lot of chicken nuggets still in CACFP, breaded meats, things like that. You also still see a lot of white bread and refined grains. So the recommendation is to replace those with whole grain. Reduce or eliminate high sugar items. Increase the offerings of fruit and veg at lunch by actually doubling. Currently, CACFP participating centers are required to serve a total of a half a cup of fruit and or vegetable, and that's been increased to half a cup of fruit, half a cup of vegetable. It is recommended that vegetables be included at snack and fresh fruit be served frequently rather than juice. So juice should not be used as a substitute for fruit or vegetable. That sodium be reduced and that 1% or skim milk be served in place of 2% or whole milk. Now this, you don't need to be able to see this clearly. I just put this up to illustrate how, in addition to the types of foods that are being served, the IOM recommends portion size changes in all of these categories that are highlighted. And so just as an example, because today I'll be talking about lunch, I mentioned that fruits and vegetables portions have been doubled. Grains have increased, have also been doubled. So a half a slice of bread is now, you'll now see a full slice. So it's gone from a half an ounce to an ounce. Meat portions are decreasing from 1.5 ounce to one. And interestingly, and I'm not exactly sure why, milk is being, is going from 3/4 cup to a half a cup. So we conducted two studies. The first was a pilot where we wanted to see what would happen if we changed the menus to reflect the IOM standards. We worked with one CACFP participating center in outside of New Haven. All children were between the ages of 3 and 5, and in this particular center, there was a cook and a full kitchen, and so all of the meals were prepared on site. The children, the mean age of the kids was 4.4 years, and they were 60% female. There was a pretty good racial and ethnic mix, with 41% being African American, 38% white, 14% Hispanic, and 7% Asian. Now this group, interestingly, was a bit below the national average in terms of obesity rates, so it's only 16% of the children were overweight or obese. And the household income was fairly low. The median was $33,600. So these methods are similar to those that I'll mention later, but in this pilot, we observed lunch on two occasions, and we had a team of data collectors come into the preschool and actually observe at the table. We looked at exactly what each child was being served, or serving themselves, actually, because the children actually have family-style meals, so they take their own, they serve themselves. And so we measured pre-post the weights of all of the serving dishes. So if you can imagine a table with 8 children, we had a scale in the center of the table, and each bowl was put on for a pre-weight. The child took their serving, and then it was put back on for a post-weight. So it took a bit of time, but we did that for every meal component. We measured spills. We had to train our data collectors to really watch, because kids sometimes grab things from other kids. They drop things on the floor and you don't know who it belonged to. So we spent a lot of time training so that we were sure that we had really, really good data. Then we got the nutrition information from the cook, and we compared both what was being served, the quantities being served, and what the children ate between those two conditions. The outcomes of interest, both in terms of what ended up on the plate and what was consumed, were fiber, protein, saturated and total fat, calories, and sodium. And here was the menu. This particular center was already serving fairly good food. This was the worst thing we could find on their current menu. So it's not terrible, and they were having a breaded fried chicken patty and crackers that were not whole grain. The green beans weren't prepared with anything, any additional fat. Apples, fresh apples, and 1% milk. And in Connecticut, almost all child care centers that participate in CACFP are already serving 1% milk, so you could imagine that this, for states or centers and other places where full fat is still the norm, that this would be feel like a bigger change to the children. And then so we modified this meal by serving grilled chicken, whole wheat bread, the same green beans, the additional vegetable, which is carrots, apples, and milk. And here's what we found. So this slide shows you the grams of food that were served, were ended up on the plate. And the differences here reflect not only the differences in portion size recommended by the IOM, but also the fact that in the control condition, children are serving themselves with regular spoons. And while the cook knows how much food needs to be on the table and the teachers know around about how much needs to be put on the plate, there's no real measurement by the staff. And with IOM, we actually replaced their serving spoons with measuring cups with handles. And so we knew exactly, we were there to observe, we knew exactly how much that they were getting the IOM recommended amount. So the serving of chicken was smaller, beverage was similar, and I think that it's because in childcare there's less spilling, and the staff seem to want to start the kids small and then provide seconds if requested. The bread and crackers, this is not a great comparison. We weren't able to, you needed to use bread rather than a whole grain cracker, because in order to get the serving size to match up, there would have been like 8 or 9 crackers on the plate, so it wasn't really a realistic thing to serve. The green beans and carrots were about the same in terms of, the carrots were not served initially, but the same serving size, and so the vegetables and fruit were increased with IOM. And so this is what we found, pretty dramatic increases in grams of fruits consumed, vegetables, grains, and a large reduction in the amount of meat that was consumed. All of these were significant. And another way to look at this in terms of meal components is percent difference, and we found that there was a 63% increase in vegetable intake in the IOM condition. Doubling of fruit, grains increased again, not a great two foods to compare, but increased quite a bit. And milk, there was a small but not significant reduction. Calories were reduced slightly. This was not a significant difference between groups. Everything else here was significant. So fat was reduced by almost 48%, saturated fat by 44%, sodium a huge decrease, 63%, fiber increased by 64%, and protein was decreased by 39%. All of those were significant. And so what does this look like in terms of grams consumed? Calories, there were about 31, on average, 31 fewer calories in the IOM condition. Fiber increased by about 2 grams, fat decreased by 3, and saturated fat by 1, and protein was also, there was about a 7 gram reduction in protein. We didn't view this as a problem because the kids in the baseline condition were over consuming protein, so that was fine. And then the huge reduction in sodium was probably the most exciting thing we found, one of the most exciting things we found here. And so another way to look at this, everybody's kind of interested in you know, the plate and the distribution of food on the plate. And so what we found was the majority of calories in the control condition or the baseline condition came from meat. And when with the IOM condition, that we had a better distribution of calories on the plate. And so we went from 12% of calories in the control condition coming from fruits and vegetables to about 30% in the IOM condition. And we looked at the percent of children that consumed at least one CACFP serving of fruit, and that increased from 51% to 81% in IOM, and same with vegetables, from 45 to 69%. So moving on to the next study, it was really the same, we used the exact same methods, but we went into a larger school in a lower socioeconomic bracket where the meals were, they had vendor service. Again, the age was similar. It was about half female. Race and ethnicity was a little bit more, a little bit different distribution, with 49% African American, 37% Hispanic, and many more of the children were overweight or obese. 48% of the Hispanic children were overweight or obese, and it was a very low income sample. Here, we were in the center for the whole day. This was the menu that they had pre and post. We were looking just at lunch, in the interest of time right now, where we went from barbecued ribs to grilled chicken, corn muffin to whole wheat roll. Collard greens remained the same. We added the additional vegetable, which was carrot, and apples and milk remained the same. And again, we found significant reductions in fat, saturated fat, and protein, and increases in fiber. Very similar results to the pilot. Large decrease in sodium, extremely large. I think that was due to the ribs being as processed as they were very high in sodium, and calories. There was a significant reduction in calories in this study, but not in the other. Meat consumption went down, grain consumption went up, vegetable intake again nearly doubled, and same with fruit. So we're seeing the same similar results in this group that has had, and I know this just from having been in the centers, much less exposure to healthy food than the children in the pilot group. So this is really promising. And then again, if you're looking at the distribution of calories, you'll see that only 6% of calories in the baseline condition come from produce, from fruit and vegetables. I'm sorry, this is for the whole day. This is the only thing that I'm, the only data I'm showing you that includes data from breakfast and the afternoon snack. So they went from 6% of calories to 19% of calories. So they're eating less fruit and veg than the children in the pilot study, but they still experienced a large increase for them. So we looked just very briefly, because we didn't have great data on this, but we asked parents to tell us whether or not children were eating breakfast at home. We wanted to know whether kids were eating twice in the morning or skipping breakfast at home and having it at school, and 60% said that they had something to eat at home, and among those children, 46% ate breakfast at school as well. We don't know exactly what to make of this. You know, if children are getting up at 6 a.m., you would expect them to eat something before getting to school around 9 or 8:30 or 9. But this is just something that we're interested in pursuing in future research. And then among those kids who did not eat at home, 35% did not eat at school either. So we may have some problems in terms of breakfast with this age group. And so in conclusion, we do recommend that the USDA consider carefully what the IOM has to say in terms of recommendations for improvements to nutrition standards. We think overall, just by serving different foods that meet these different criteria, the children are actually eating the food, and we saw really significant increases in fruits and vegetable consumption, increase in fiber, decreases in sodium and saturated fat. So we feel like overall the IOM recommendations are excellent. We are a little concerned about that decrease in calories that we saw in the lower socioeconomic group. And that is interesting. We tried very hard to collect 24-hour recall data from parents, and we found that it was nearly impossible because a lot of the children in the center are cared for by multiple people outside of the center. And so we really feel like the USDA should fund more research looking at what children in this group are doing outside of school, so we know how serious a problem it is if they're eating a little bit less in probably the short term, because what we see is that it does take a great deal of time for children to become accustomed to a new dietary pattern, and I don't expect that they'll continue to indefinitely eat less than they are eating now in the school day. But nevertheless, we recommend study in that area. And I'm also interested in knowing the rationale for decreasing the milk portion size, because we feel like at this point kids are under consuming milk, at least in these samples. And then willingness to try vegetables is always a tough, it's always something that needs more study. It's the children increase their consumption a great deal, but they're still on the low side in terms of vegetable consumption, so we recommend more research. And I just want to quickly acknowledge the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for their funding. We had a healthy eating research grant, and thank the child care director, staff, and children who were very, very generous with their time, and then the many, many, many data collectors we had on our study. Thank you.